Chapter 29. Dread Air. Sanctus time. Every Ash Angel had to do service at least 1 week during the year. They spent 4 days at Raphael's Goodwill Barn above the Midwest Operations Center selling second-hand clothing to the poor and needy. Now Hilo understood where all his Ash Angel's clothing had come from. Dolorum would have approved of Sanctus time. Hilo used his new Inspire bestowal 3 times to perk up troubled shoppers, and it felt good. At the end of the 4th day, the Gabriels had cleared Cassandra's team of any wrongdoing, much to Cassandra's relief. She viewed used clothing like dirty diapers. When a vision from the Oculum sent them to the airport, she was more than happy to leave. Hilo pulled at his dark collar as he waited to board Flight 920A to Dallas and the Kansas City airport. He wore the attire of a Catholic priest, ready to get revenge on whoever had suggested it as his disguise. Travelers swarmed the terminal in the late afternoon. Business executives trying to get home, soldiers heading back to base, grandparents anxious for the smiles of their grandchildren. People swooped in to stare at blue monitors listing their connections and then darted away. They reminded Hilo of the hummingbirds hovering at his mother's feeder outside the kitchen window. The buzz and hum of humanity in motion. Hilo shifted in his vinyl seat and checked his watch. Antsy travelers poured into the gate area as flight time neared. A little girl with blonde pigtails kept staring at him from across the aisle. Perhaps she wasn't Catholic. His cover identity was young Father Patrick, heading to his new congregation in the City of Churches. He had no idea how to behave. Raised in a Protestant family, he wasn't even sure, doctrinally, what he was supposed to believe. Act nice. Don't stare at the hot women walking by. Say wise, religious things. During the taxi ride over, he'd surfed the internet for more information on his sudden holy calling. By the time he walked through the metal detector, all he knew was that he had no desire to get into any debates about consubstantiation or the merits of abandoning the concept of limbo. And if anyone asked the details of how a new pope was chosen, he would fake a brain aneurysm. Cassandra sat behind him on the hard seats, reading a book on her phone. With her offhand, she patted her old lady's short gray curls back into place. Her morph was perfect as always, down to the cloud of perfume she'd unleashed as Mrs. Honeycutt 5 days before. Corinth sat by her, playing her teenage grandson with denim shorts, puffy black coat, and hat turned askew. Operations had ordered blank-only teams for the mission. Goldbo left on an earlier flight to Dallas to provide any support should they need him on the other side.
"Good afternoon, everyone," the gate attendant broke in over the noise. "We'll start general boarding of Flight 920A with service to Dallas in a few minutes. We will begin with our Platinum Rewards travelers first. Please have your boarding passes ready."
The passengers formed haphazard lines. Hilo didn't enjoy airplanes enough to want to get on first, but he'd never traveled on a Boeing Dreamliner before. The behemoth filled the gate window like the god of airplanes, every other aircraft unworthy by comparison. The chatter at the gate drowned out the TV that hung on a pillar, the closed captioning crawling across the screen. News stories of the shooting in Springfield peppered the news. Ilion Gutra reported as dead. At least they had inconvenienced the law firm. After a coffee commercial, Telemirin popped up on the screen, closed captioning indicating she was coming up next. Cassandra noticed too.
"Your girlfriend's going to be on TV, Father Patrick," she whispered.
"No way," Corinth disagreed.
"The fine girl is all mine, baby. Father Patrick must keep his vow."
Grandma cuffed him on the back of the head, sending his hat to the floor. Corinth had been staring at every nice pair of legs walking by since they had arrived. Tella came into view on the screen. She sat on a stool in a tight golden dress, guitar on her lap. She said hello to the host, pushing a strand of her wavy brown hair behind her ear. Hilo wished he could hear her. Corinth seemed content to watch. After a brief introduction, she launched into a song, the words transcribed onto the screen.
"We'll now begin boarding our first class passengers."
Thumbs flying over the keys, Hilo transcribed the lyrics into his phone.
The dark tone of the song surprised him. Just as with Angel in Chains, its imagery convinced him that her attunement had inspired her music. Flesh that does not feel hunts the heart it once concealed, the treasure stolen from its chest by the hand of wickedness. A heart that does not beat awaits the sunrise in the east, a secret marriage to begin, flesh and heart now one again. The east wind blows a tempest in, and some there be that welcome it, but flesh and heart will always sing in case an angel's listening. A blade's a blade beneath the sun until it journeys through the one, whose soul's a forge of glowing light, lifeless steel, now burning bright. The east wind blows a tempest in, and some there be that welcome it, but flesh and heart will always sing in case an angel's listening. She smiled and stood, bowing to unheard applause. Hilo noted the name of the show so he could look it up later. "We'll now begin boarding all passengers, all rows." He picked up his leather briefcase. The thick Bible inside shifted among the toiletries and a change of clothes. The gate agent scanned his ticket, and he followed the stream of fidgety passengers slowly down the jetway and onto the waiting aircraft. Somewhere, three other Gabriel teams were boarding three other Dreamliners in JFK, Salt Lake City, and Miami. When they were called into the op center beneath Raphael's Goodwill barn, they learned that the Oculum visionary had seen four ticket stubs burning in a fire, noting the flight number of each. All four were Dreamliner flights on the same day, all with flights in the late afternoon. One left from Kansas City, and Cassandra's team was available. They had come early to wander the terminals and do recon, but they hadn't spotted any dreads or ghost packers. As Hilo turned the corner on the jetway, he glanced down the line behind him. Still no red auras. Would they board late to avoid detection until the last possible moment? Even more important, did they know the Ash Angels were here? The Medius had considered trying to ground all the planes. All the Gabriel agent had to do to ground a plane was act crazy and yell bomb, then sit in prison for ages. In the past, that tactic had simply led to dreads boarding another flight, one without Ash Angels. The mission was to put a stop to whatever the dreads had in mind. Modern security protocols made it difficult for them to employ weapons, but a dread with the strength bestowal could tear up an airplane. Hilo's seat waited way at the back. He passed Cassandra and Corinth, the latter snuggling affectionately with his irritated grandmother. Hilo smiled, trying not to clip anyone's elbow with his suitcase. Craning his head, he glanced down the length of the plane. No dreads. He passed what seemed like 9,000 rows before he arrived at his spot in the hinterlands of the plane. He had the window seat in the grouping of three, a college-aged African-American male in the aisle seat leaning back, a pair of red earbuds pumping music. Hilo stowed his modest carry-on in the generous overhead compartment and squeezed by his roommate. After taking his seat, he admired the futuristic window dimmer that gradually darkened and lightened the glass at the push of a button.
"Excuse me, Father, do you mind if I have the window seat?"
Hilo glanced up and shut his eyes. Unbelievable. He took a breath to calm himself before opening them. Dahlia. Again. The young man's eyes brightened at the gorgeous woman in dark slacks and tight purple sweater. If he knew who she was, he'd kept his head down and eyes on his phone. "Of course," he replied, pushing out into the aisle. It'd be easier to contain her if she was next to the window.
"Thank you, Father," she said, running a finger along his chest as she passed.
Her tight backside became their roommate's in-flight movie as she passed, and he threw Hilo a boyish grin. Hilo tried his best disapproving stare, and the young man shrugged. Hilo couldn't blame him. He couldn't see the red aura that came with the curves. Hilo's phone beeped. "Is that her?" Cassandra texted. "Yep," he returned. Dahlia regarded him teasingly.
"Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. It's been millennia since my last confession."
"Are you stalking me?" Hilo asked, trying to keep his voice low. He glanced over at their seatmate, thankful to see the earbuds still in his ears, though he was keeping half, if not three-fourths of an eye on Dahlia.
Stalking would be a bit of hyperbole, though I confess I have been dying to ask you a question. When I said, get out at your apartment the other day, what did you do? Pack a few things, do your taxes, watch a little TV, or what? Just wanted a little cage match with the thrall? They did explain during your training that dreads like to strike right before dusk so they have the benefit of healing, right?
Yeah, but I didn't have time. He came right after you left.
If you had left when I did, you would have been out with time to spare.
Sorry. I guess I should thank you, but nobody in the Ash Angel organization can figure out why you would want to help me in the first place. They say the only reason you're doing it is to set me up for something.
Little monitors in the backs of the seats popped to life, an attractive stewardess delivering the safety briefing. Hilo knew no one paid attention, but with Dahlia on board, the instructions took on a new importance.
Why, Father, Dahlia teased, you have forgotten to buckle up, and it appears you aren't paying any attention to the poor flight attendant. You see,
she reached over and dug under his thigh.
You put this end in this end, and then pull this strap.
She clicked it together and pulled it down.
I know how to operate a seatbelt. I'm not an idiot.
She was messing with him.
Why? I'm not so sure, Father. Let's examine the evidence, shall we? You walked into the Hammer Bar and Grill full of creatures bent on killing the likes of you, and foolishly defended a dread woman from other dreads. You're either some kind of moron, or something strange the likes of which I've never seen in my long, lugubrious existence.
Hilo didn't know what lugubrious meant and vowed to look it up later.
I was just, I don't know, brought up to, well, forget it. The real question is why you gave us a chance to run. Most of the Ash Angels I tell the story to think I'm a liar. They say Dredd's hatred of us is instinctual, that they feel compelled to destroy us. Is that true?
She thought for a moment.
Maybe for young ones who have only been around for a few decades. I've lived so long that nothing I do is instinctual anymore. But your Ash Angel compatriots are right about one thing. I'm helping you because I want something from you.
Finally, he could get to the bottom of this. What could I have that you want?
I need to know why the man in the bathroom ordered you killed rather than processing you like he's done with other Ash Angels. He wanted you dead almost from the moment they threw you in the tub. Why? What did you say?
What's his name? Hilo asked.
I can't say it. I can't say anything about him at all.
Can't or won't?
Her eyes bored into his.
Can't. I literally can't.
Hilo tried to read her expression. She seemed sincere.
You mean you're forbidden to under threat of punishment?
It's worse than that.
The flight attendant walked by and reminded him to turn off his phone. He checked the screen. One message from Cassandra. Be careful.
Duh.
He killed the phone and stuffed it in his pocket.
How could it be worse than that? Hilo asked.
She leaned in close, the smell of lavender tickling his nose.
Look, I can tell you're a new Ash Angel, but I've got to believe that whatever the obvious defects of your trainers, you've surely been made aware that all is not normal in the shady world of dreads. We didn't all get together at a convention in Florida one weekend and drink beer and decide to elect a president and a treasurer and get to work dismantling the Ash Angel organization. We are a solitary, selfish group of people who can hardly agree on anything or even care about the same thing, much less rally together and stage a massive attack on Blanks or your Trevex cover facility. Yes, there are those who are true followers of the man you saw that night. But believe me, the rest of us cannot escape his compelling will. I've known him for a long time, a long, long time. And he has never wielded this kind of power over our kind before. I think you know how he does it. Why else would he kill you rather than torture you for information when he was clearly ready to do so?
Why else would he be so consumed with taking you down that he would force the shed to create a dread thrall to do it? You know something, and I need to know what that something is. It's the only hope that I have to escape him.
The engine spooled, pressing them back into their seats. The dull gray of the tarmac gave way to the blues and oranges of the lowering red sun as the massive plane powered down the runway and roared into the sky. Kansas City shrunk and faded, bathed in a haze. Hilo glanced at Dahlia. He knew what she wanted. Was it possible she hadn't seen the man use his odd pendant? If she had known the man as long as she claimed, how had it escaped her notice? Hilo had seen it twice and had barely been with the man above 10 minutes. If the device could compel creatures of evil, they are wasting their time uncovering dread funding and organization. They needed a manhunt. And if Dahlia honestly wished to be free of the man's control, they might have an unexpected ally among the dreads. Had Ash Angels ever partnered with dreads before? Hilo turned toward her, scooting away from her red aura a little.
I think we can help each other here, he said. We would like for the dreads to go back to behaving the way they were, and it sounds like you do too. Am I right?
Yes, she said. Her playful smirk was gone, lips a thin line. Something had changed.
Then here's my deal. You tell me why I'm on this plane, and I'll tell you what happened between me and the man in the bathroom that night.
You don't know why you're here? She asked. Doesn't your oculum tell you what is going to happen?
The visions aren't always complete or clear. The visionary simply saw 4 tickets with 4 flight numbers on fire.
4! She exclaimed loudly enough to elicit a glance from the man on the aisle. She grimaced, turning toward the window for several moments.
Yes, 4, Hilo whispered. Why did the number matter? All of them dreamliners. What is going on? Are you here for me, or is there another reason?
She sat back, eyes sad but burning with something else.
Didn't you hear me? I can't tell you what's going on. I literally can't. You have got to tell me what happened in that bathroom. There might not be another chance.
Her tone chilled his heart. He had to get her to tell him what they were planning.
Oh, Hilo replied, taking a tone of mocking disbelief. Just like you conveniently can't talk about the man.
Her face hardened, and she gripped his arm, fingers digging into his flesh.
There is nothing convenient about it. You have no idea what it's like to be a slave to the will of another, so don't get on your trash angel white horse and ride around like I'm some pathetic child who's lying to protect her own skin.
The flight attendant's cart pulled into Hilo's peripheral vision.
Excuse me, Father, can I get you something to drink?
Dahlia released her vice-like grip on his arm and folded her arms, turning back to the window. Hilo shook his head at the flight attendant, and Dahlia waved her away.
Look, Hilo said, dreads aren't known for their forthright honesty and harvest basket goodness. You've got to give me something I can use. For all I know, you're here under orders from your mystery man. Maybe he wants you to figure out how much I know so he can decide whether it's worth it to butcher a few more dreads to make a thrall or two to come after me.
She kept her eyes out the window, tapping her lip for a moment, and then turned toward him.
Okay, this is all I can give you. It's not much, but it will start you on the path. I'll tell you my name, the one I was given when I was born. It won't tell you everything, but it will get you close. It's the best I can do.
Your name? Okay, what is it?
Aklima,
she said like someone trying to remember a word in a foreign language.
My name is Aklima,
she said again, the word coming more smoothly. Her eyes went distant, and she sat still, as if trapped in a memory. The plane bounced in the turbulence, and she shook her head and grabbed his arm.
Now tell me what happened.
He opened his mouth, but an old lady scooting down the aisle caught his attention, Cassandra moving a bit more spryly than she should for her age. She frowned like an old hag who just found out the neighbor kids had killed her cat.
Father, she said, eyeing Dahlia angrily,
I'm afraid we have a little problem in the front, and we could use your priestly assistance.
You'll have to wait, ma'am, Dahlia said bluntly. I've a few more sins to confess to the good father.
That's nice, dear. But, Father Patrick, you are aware of what an envoy is, aren't you? One is flying our little plane.
Cassandra's eyes bulged and flicked toward the cockpit. Hilo understood. Envoys were dreads given one gift from a shed, usually the ability to appear as anyone. Just as thralls died in 36 hours, envoys lost their gifts in 36 hours. The dreads had replaced the pilots of four packed airplanes with envoys. This was a suicide mission. Hilo turned to Dahlia, who wouldn't look him in the eye. Disgust surged in his gut. No. He leaned in close. Are you here to bring this plane down? He whispered. There are kids on this plane. She didn't answer, jaw set, eyes watering. Terror gripped Hilo's heart, and he pushed past the startled young man in the aisle, following Cassandra forward.
Settle down, Father, Cassandra reminded him quietly. You look like a linebacker charging after a quarterback who just spit on his mother. We can't alarm anyone. This will get ugly soon enough.
Corinth waited near the middle of the plane, waving for them to follow. They gathered outside the lavatories near the galley and first class, pretending they were in line waiting for someone to get out, even though it was unoccupied.
So what's the dread's play here? Corinth asked. Is this another trap to kill Blanks?
If it is, Cassandra said, they'll dump the plane in the water. But it seems an awfully brutal way to take down a few Ash Angels. This is going to bring a lot of press and a lot of heat. They do it right before dusk, so they can heal and leave. How long till sundown?
Hilo flipped through his phone.
20 minutes.
Any time now.
Cassandra ran her hands through her gray hair, mind racing.
The flight crew in the cockpit is likely dead by now. Either one of you know how to fly a plane?
They shook their heads. Cassandra closed her eyes.
Damn it, this is not going to end well. We've got to get into that cockpit. Hopefully someone on this plane knows how to fly one.
A lot of these planes can practically fly themselves,
Hilo offered.
Getting into the cockpit is the hard part. The doors are reinforced,
Corinth added quietly.
I only have speed and protection as my bestowals.
Hilo is going to have to use his strength to do it, Cassandra said.
As soon as he hits that door, all hell is going to break loose.
The engines spooled down and the plane tilted downward, the sing-song warning for everyone to return to their seat chiming throughout the plane.
This is your captain here from the flight deck. It looks like there's some turbulence up ahead. We're going to decrease our altitude a bit and make a few zigs and zags to see if we can avoid it. We do ask that everyone return to their seats, as it may get a little bumpy.
Cassandra shook her head.
Here we go. So how far off course does a plane have to get before they call out the F-16s?
Corinth asked.
F-16s aren't going to help us, Cassandra said.
The vacant-eyed flight attendant approached.
The captain has asked that everyone return to their seats. Can I use the bathroom first?
Cassandra asked.
The lavatory is unoccupied, ma'am,
the flight attendant informed her.
Oh, silly me, I didn't notice. I'm sorry to make you wait, Father.
That's all right, ma'am, Hilo played along. You go on ahead.
Cassandra stepped into the lavatory and closed it. The flight attendant wandered off, and Hilo knocked on the door. Cassandra came out. The plane's rate of descent steepened, the shadowy horizon aslant in the passenger windows.
It's go time. Hilo, you get in there. We'll follow. If there's an air marshal on board, there'll be gunfire. After the 9/11 attacks, the forward passengers are likely to come after us too. Once the dread is taken care of, just surrender. Hopefully operations can find a way to get us out of jail before our sixth ascendancy. You ready, Hilo?
He wasn't. It was crazy. Kick in a cockpit door? Cassandra put her hand on his shoulder.
You've got to do this, Hilo. There is no other way to save these people. We'll be right behind you.
Dahlia walking forward distracted them, and they tensed. She regarded them with a thin-lipped frown as she passed and opened the lavatory door.
She looked at her slender, silver watch and threw them a meaningful look before stepping inside and closing herself in. Hilo steeled himself and marched forward. The girl with pigtails sat in first class and watched him go by, poking her mother.
"Why is he dressed like that?" she asked.
Hilo didn't hear the answer. Her next question would be, "Why is that man trying to crash the plane?" The farther he went, the more the weight of his heart dragged against his feet. The forward lavatory of the plane prevented a run at the cockpit door. He would have to get to the very front. As he approached, the flight attendant rounded the corner, holding him up with a hand.
"Excuse me, father," he said. "The forward lavatories are for our first-class passengers only."
Hilo stopped and blinked, mind in turmoil and sluggish.
"We're all first-class passengers to God, ma'am."
"Is anyone in it?"
"Well, no, but can you do me a favor? I'd really like to go before we hit the turbulence."
Outside the window, the wintry brown horizon slowly rose to greet them, much closer than it should be for a commercial passenger jet in mid-flight. The flight attendant stepped aside to let him pass as the fasten-your-seatbelt chime dinged again. Hilo strode forward past passengers absorbed in potato chips, cola, and electronics. One commented offhandedly to a seatmate that the plane seemed a bit low. The flight attendant went back to the galley, and Hilo turned the corner. There it was. He stood face to face with a state-of-the-art reinforced door. Flight deck door, authorized personnel only. Any attempt at unauthorized entry may result in death. He attacked it. Calling forth his strength, he lifted his right leg and kicked the door waist high. The booming thud and the whining cry of the locking bar bending reverberated through the plane. Gasps and silence followed. The bent, but not broken, door seemed to laugh at him. His assault had done nothing except stamp an imprint of his foot in the metal. Footsteps pounded down the unseen aisle behind him. Conserving divine strength was not an option. He pulled it all in and let loose. The door shrieked inward in a blast of broken metal and plastic. He took a step forward, but the plane, powered up to full, pitched steeply downward and yawed to the right. Passengers screamed in terror. The klaxons and robotic warning voices of the safety systems demanded that the pilot pull up and level off. Hilo tumbled to his left, an awkward weightlessness pulling him toward the ceiling. Fear burned away his confusion. He grabbed the edge of the cockpit doorway, pulling himself forward. With a yell, he wedged around the door and into the rear of the cockpit. The flight crew was dead. The co-pilot's head cranked at a 90-degree angle, bobbing with the shuddering plane. The navigator was sprawled on the floor, back bent in half. The Dread Envoy gripped the controls, pushing the plane down. Several control panels had been pulled off, the innards of the control systems spilling out into the cockpit. Screens blinked red, buttons flashed, the klaxons demanded attention. All the racket and wild blinking in front of him, all the terrified wailing behind, all of it faded to nothing at the sight of the ground hurtling toward him in the cockpit window. He couldn't save the plane. The engines burned full throttle in a missile shot at the waiting trees, their bony limbs and branches reaching out to tear the plane apart and enfold the passengers in death. A purple fury burned in Hilo's heart. Nothing remained but revenge. He scrambled forward against the weightlessness, clawing at the co-pilot seat and propelling himself forward. The Dread Envoy raised his fist and hammered it down on Hilo's forearm, snapping it. Hilo lost control, legs rising up behind him, but the Dread reached out and grabbed his head, pressing Hilo's face into the cockpit window with his right hand. Hilo fought, but his strength was gone. The Dread laughed, pitched the plane up slightly, and rolled it hard left. The left wing hit the treetops first. An incredible howling chorus of screaming wind and roaring engines mixed with the irresistible force of ripping, devouring inertia. The soft flesh of the passengers, the carbon mesh of the hull, and the burning slime of jet fuel were thrown and spun together and then pulverized in the deafening impact. Trees snapped and burned as the fuselage shot through the forest like a mountain of fire. The force tore Hilo's body limb from limb, every joint and junction sundered and shredded. A maelstrom of debris and fire and dirt exploded and swirled, his senses utterly defeated in their attempt to comprehend it. His decapitated head rocketed through the treetops, flesh tearing and skull cracking. Downward it flew, spinning and knocking hard among branches and rocks until it bumped into the base of a tree and stopped, one good eye facing outward. His remains lay just ahead of the bulk of the wreckage. Dark smoke clouded his vision as the wasted chunks of the plane settled around him. But something else rose, a turbulent black mist, the same darkness that had swirled around the Shadim he had seen. He remembered Cassandra's lesson. This was the site of an atrocity, a hole punched through the wall, letting a cloud of Vexus through. Only the fire hissed and crackled, everything living scared away by the thunderous impact. Nothing whole remained. An arm in a tan suit sleeve lay in front of him, wedding ring still on its finger. Brown leaves half concealed a woman's high-heeled shoe near a bent headrest. Luggage burned next to the cone of the cockpit nose, the only part of the airplane Hilo could see. Dusk would come soon. The dreads would be healed if their hearts hadn't burned in the impact. Would they hunt him down? Find what was left of him? He saw the Dread Envoy first in his peripheral vision, his pilot uniform a shredded, blackened mess. Dahlia followed after him, stepping gingerly through the rubble. Her sweater and pants were a mess of gaping holes, smeared dirt and leaves. Hilo vowed that the next time he saw her, there would be no more polite conversations. He would never help her. Arcus Ebenezer was right. Dreads needed eliminating and deserved no other consideration.
Hurry up,
the envoy grunted to Dahlia, who poked around the wreckage looking for something.
They'll get choppers here soon.
Dahlia threw the dread a sour look and then rolled up the sleeve of her left arm. In the dimming light, Hilo could make out three curious tattoos on her forearm. Kneeling, she placed the tattoos directly on the cold, leaf-strewn ground. She closed her eyes, face going slack. At first, Hilo couldn't tell what she was doing, but in moments, the dark, misty aura of Vexus dissipated from the woods like a fog being burned away. The abyssal aura gathered around her. In scant seconds, Dahlia had absorbed all the Vexus. She stood and lowered her sleeve, though a long tear in the cloth still showed the edges of the curious tattoos. Her red aura was nearly completely subsumed by the swirling black. She resumed her search, lifting torn seats and bent fuselage.
The trash angels are in pieces, the dread said. We'll never find their hearts in time.
Shut up,
Dahlia returned with an irritated frown. A jet rocketed overhead, flying low.
That's it, the dread envoy said. I'm going with or without you.
They fled, running down the hill behind him and into the gathering darkness until the snapping and crunching of their passing faded, leaving only the crackling of the fires. Hilo closed his eyes as guilt and anger settled in. The dawn was a long way off,